Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Coffee and Conversation right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Ria. I am your host, and today I am pleased to introduce Eric Smith, who is the Operations Manager, Luxury Hospitality Management. How are you, Eric?
I'm very well. Excited to be here. Thank you.
Well, you know what? We've been doing a series of interviews with the different people that make up Luxury Hospitality Management, and the team is such an amazing combination. How do you guys come together that way? I mean, it just seems like you all gel so well.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you noticed it. I mean, I'm in the middle of it all day. Of course, a lot is online. There's a few tricks to what we do. First of all, we practice what we preach. We talked, I think, in the previous interviews, you talked a lot about the talent dynamics that we run in our programs, but we run it within our company as well. So if we have a gap to fill, if we are growing in such a way that we need to add someone, we always look at the graph and see if in what energy we like to add someone. Most important, though, is the attitude that people have, the way they look at life, the way they look at work. And I think the biggest trick is that we're all, basically all of us, are self-employed. So it's a weird company in that sense that we are, I call us a collective of like-minded people who go for the same fact. So it's not a company in a strict way that we hire people and we tell them what to do. We just cooperate. And I think that's what you really sensed when you did the interviews, that everyone's really passionate about what they do and collectively what we do. And it's great to be part of that.
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. When did you start getting interested into the hospitality industry? Because your background is extensively, you know, hospitality to the upper echelon.
That's right. I think it was at the age of six, around that whenever my parents took me to my grandma, she would invite the whole neighborhood over, and I would be the one serving them bites and drinks, just naturally. I don't know why I started that. But I liked it. I liked to take care of people. And I went to catering college in Amsterdam and then started my career. And I noticed that part of the hospitality work is not as intelligent as can be. I mean, setting up tables. So I thought, you know, use your intelligence to do it as fast as possible and to as efficient as possible. And because I looked at it that way, I progressed quite quickly and got promoted every year. Within 4 years, I was the maitre d'. I became a general manager of hotels, but always at that top level because I really felt that service is the utmost thing you can deliver to people. Service in the sense that you take care of someone else's needs with full self-respect, and especially that last bit is important. Not to be a servant, but to be proud of what you do and really show that. And that's how I've always worked. I did that for over 20 years, all in Holland, Michelin-starred restaurants, five-star hotels. And after 20-odd years, I thought, you know, it's time for something else. I need to move on and do something different. So I took some time off, thought to myself, what would be a natural next step to take? And I looked back and I really enjoyed working with young people, sharing my experience, sharing my knowledge, and hopefully setting them up for success and giving them the lessons that I've learned through life, hopefully at a younger age. And faith had it that I ran into two guys who run a company in bar management training. I joined them, and through them I met Peter Vogel, the founder and owner of Luxury Hospitality. And I joined the team, and that's now almost 3 years ago. I progressed during the years, now the operations manager. So basically I assist Peter in any way of running the company and making decisions together, and exploring new possibilities to spread the word of service in the broadest sense of the word.
Well, one thing that I did actually find really fascinating, and it's something that I am at a complete loss about. You've had quite extensive training in cigars.
Yes.
Tell me about that a little bit, because I mean, it's, you know, I mean, you see these beautiful images, you know, through social media and advertising and, you know, a cigar and I, you know, a glass of brandy or something, but it seems to portray, you know, like Sherlock Holmes and sitting in a library. And there's a whole sort of connotation that goes with that. I don't know anything about cigars. And I guess I'm wondering, what kind of teaching do you get when you start to explore the world of cigars?
Yeah, that's a good question. The difference between cigars is often seen as smoking, and smoking is cigarettes. It's the same difference as drinking fruit juice in the morning or drinking wine with dinner. Tobacco in cigars is fermented the same way that grape juice is fermented and then becomes wine. And as it ferments, all these different flavors come up, all these different aspects to enjoy, to linger. And like in Bordeaux wines, where it's a blend of different grape varieties and different plots, it's the same with cigars. It's always a blend of different types of tobacco and therefore a very rich palette of flavors. I've always had a fascination for cigars, and the first two Michelin-starred restaurants that I started working in, this was in 2005, it had a huge humidor, a huge cigar collection, but no one actually paid attention to it. Back then, it was still allowed to smoke cigars in the restaurant. All the specialisms were given, so we had someone responsible for the tea, two sommeliers, and but no one was paying attention to the cigars. I was the maitre d', but I thought, you know, let me pick this up. I found a great shop in Delft, in the town close to the restaurant, with an owner. He was, I think, in his 60s or even 70s, and he absolutely adored cigars. And we agreed that I would come in between lunch and dinner service on Wednesday afternoon every week, and we would smoke a cigar together. He would tell me all about it. We would taste it. I would take notes. And if I liked it, I would buy, I don't know, 5 or 10 and add it to the collection. If I didn't, I knew that this is something I don't like or maybe didn't see the market for it. So over the years that progressed, I think together we smoked more than 200 different cigars. He told me all about it. And that way we had a collection of, I think, 60 different cigars in that restaurant, ranging from, I don't know, 5 euros to 70 euros a piece. And after that, I was invited to join an international competition in Cuba, the Cuba Cigar Sommelier Competition. And I competed there in 2008, and it was an amazing experience to be with the world's best audiences of 800 people looking what I did, and it was very, very, very interesting.
Well, tell me, I mean, you know, cigars can be quite expensive, correct? I mean, it's the same as wine, as you speak. You know, you can have like $2,000-$4,000 bottles of wine or euro bottles of wine. Same with cigars.
Well, not that expensive. Of course, it's market value. So if something is limited, then of course the prices can go up. But keep in mind, to make a cigar, every leaf that is inside that cigar has been handled over 100 times before it ends up in your hands and it's smokable.
Wow.
So to check the plant, to grow the plant, to harvest it, to cure the leaves, to dry them, to ferment them, to store them, to select them, etc., etc. There's all these processes that they go through. It's a true art, and it's comparable to wines. Every wine, if you know a certain chateau, it's different every year because the climate, the nature is different every year, right? So to make sure that they taste the same, they need to do quite difficult blending of the different tobacco types. And there's so much to discover, and it's personally, I love smoking cigars because it's a great excuse to sit down for an hour, maybe 2 hours, and do nothing without people coming up to you and asking, are you okay? You're just sitting there. Especially after dinner, when you've had enough to eat, you're full, you don't want to eat anymore. You had enough to drink, you don't want to get more alcohol inside of you because, you know, maybe there's a big day tomorrow, but you still like to experience flavors. And it's such a great way of doing that without any alcohol, without any calories, without inhaling it. So a limited risk of health issues that come with smoking cigarettes. It's a great way of smoking. A good friend of mine has a a few shops in Holland, and one of them is called Cigaraguat in Amsterdam, all on Nicaraguan cigars. And he actually says that smoking cigars is healthy for you because it releases, it stops you being stressed, it drops your blood pressure, it drops your heart rate, and it's time to reflect on life. Of course, you know, there is some health issues with it, but I like his way of thinking that it's something to enjoy, and that's I think what life should be about at some occasions during the week, and it's a great way to do that.
Well, one question that I do have, you know, being somebody who has absolutely no knowledge of cigars, media has made us believe that Cuban cigars are like the end all be all of cigars. Is that true?
I don't agree. No.
Okay.
Cuba is the country where it all started. The Taito people, the original inhabitants, they actually started rolling up tobacco, drying it and smoking it. And that's what they introduced to the Spanish. Still to this day, the Spanish government owns 50% of the Cuban tobacco factories.
Wow.
That's why in cigar shops in Spain, you still see a lot of Cuban cigars. Of course, the American ban on Cuban products made it very hard for the Cubans to survive. And therefore, whatever they produce, they push out of the country because it's one of the few ways that they still can make some money. Where ideally you would keep the tobacco for 5 to 10 years, then make the cigars, and then let them sit in your warehouse for another 2 years before you actually ship them. That's how long it takes to produce cigars. If you speed up that process, then of course the quality goes down. The same goes for the soil that they use. They tend to have 2 or even 3 harvests a year. Of course, in that climate, they can do that, but it drains all the nutrients from the soil, and therefore the flavor in the tobacco itself is not as high as it could be. And I think the last important thing is that in Nicaragua, every cigar, before they put the wrapper leaf on, the outside leaf, they test it in a machine to see if the draw is good. A tobacco leaf has vines, just like, you know, like your hand, you have the vines. If you stack them up on top of each other, it could be that they're blocked, not intentionally, but that's just what happens. So you need to test it to see if the airflow is good before you actually sell it. They don't do this in Cuba. And for that reason, I think between 5 or 10% of all Cuban cigars, they fail to work. And that goes into your mind as well. If you have a favorite wine that you drink and suddenly you find a wine that is corked, the next bottle that you will open, you will think about the fact, oh, is this corked? That's what you're actually looking for. And that changes the perception of the flavors that it offers. So if you know that it's a great stick, for instance, coming from Nicaragua, then you know that it's there and it's perfect. Then that's what you're open for. It's your mind is opening up for paradise instead of thinking, you know, is this going the wrong way or is it am I lucky and is it the right way? So all of these reasons make me say that it's not the best cigars in the world. No.
So do you teach how to, I don't know, deal with a sommelier or with cigars as well under Luxury Hospitality Management?
Yes, we do quite a lot of cigar training. I did a few ones online over the last month. Of course, we couldn't travel. But the best way, of course, is training in person, taking them through all the steps, showing videos of the production method, opening up a cigar just to see what's inside and to really understand that it's just a bunch of leaves. And they are all different. They all have different colors. They have all different thickness. And most importantly, to get them through cutting it, lighting it, and in case of the training, to smoke them themselves. Service training is often seen as a technical training. It's a technical thing that you learn how to do. You learn how to cut, you learn how to light a cigar, or you learn how to carry a plate to a table and put it down in the right way. That is only 10% of what service is about. Service is about taking care of people, of their needs, taking care of that person. And to be able to do that, we tend to take stuff in our hands and bring it to them. But service is one person taking care of another person. So if you take away the fear of making mistakes in cutting a cigar or lighting it, the person doing it is actually able to point the attention to the person that they're serving it to the guest or to the owner. And that's when service really makes a mark, and when it really drives home that feeling.
And these are your specialties as well. You're a trainer in service, wine, and cigars. So you've got the trifecta there.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a professional alcoholic, like I always used to say. No, it's great to be, to have built up through my years of experience in wines and in cigars, and to be able to share that knowledge now and to be traveling all over and share that with so many people on board and in private residences that we do as well. And it's great. It's always good to tap into what people know and to see what you can add. It's not a program that you press play and then this comes out. We always adapt it to whoever we speak to. So if they have a great knowledge already on cigars, I can take it a bit further, hopefully. And if they're all green to it, we can do what we can do a basic one. It's all bespoke.
Is it normal that cigars pair with wine, or do cigars pair with things like whiskey and brandy and different things like harder spirits?
It all depends on, of course, your own palate and what you're looking for. If you think about pairing cheese and wine, the easiest rule to remember is look at the region where it's from. If you look at the Loire region in France, they make great, very refreshing white wines, and they make goat's cheese. It's not a surprise that they actually go well together, because in the olden days, that's all they had. They didn't go to other regions. The same goes for cigars, and most cigar-producing countries also produce whiskey, produce rum. So that's a great combination. Good to remember is that there's certain shades of color in cigars. So the lighter the outside of the cigar, the lighter the flavor, and therefore it's best to enjoy a drink with it which is darker in color. If an alcohol is darker in color, it has spent more time on barrels, it's an older product, and therefore it's more soft, it's more grown up, it's more gentle. So the darker the cigar, the lighter the spirit, and the lighter the cigar, the darker the spirit. That's a good rule to remember, I think.
Wow, I think we've gotten some training just, by sitting here today.
Sorry.
No, I think it's fascinating because really, you see, all these mafia movies and any of these sort of crime shows or whatever, I don't know why, but cigars tend to sort of feature hugely, right? It's like luxury, and there's always a cigar. Whenever there's something luxurious, there's always a cigar. Yeah. And, I never got the fascination. I I've known people that smoke cigars, and some of them smell great and others smell like you want to run a mile away. But I always was interested. And so when I had the chance to interview you, I really did want to learn a little bit about cigars. So thank you for that. You've given me some insight.
Very good. Now, I feel that you can only call yourself a super yacht if you have a well-selected humidor. I mean, it's so like you said, it's so... it should be so much part of luxury and really completely relaxing and enjoying the good things in life. It should be there. I'm not saying
most super yachts have them then?
They do, but not too many guests or owners actually smoke them. And I think it's something we should work on collectively, because it's such a great world. It's such a great thing to enjoy. It's such a great thing to experience and to get into. I can't imagine anything else than being on board and really enjoying it, and then in the evening after dinner sitting down and reminiscing through the day, what you did, the adventures you had, and really enjoying that.
I guess, of course, a humidor it is possible to have a small one, but it's also possible to have them built in.
Yes. Oh yes. I've been on board yachts where they have a humidor room, actually. Wow. Some people take it to a different extent, but it's it can be in any shape or form, and it's a it could be a great decoration piece as well. It's a nice, beautiful humidor, and it's something that the great thing about humidors is you actually keep these cigars alive. You keep them in the perfect state, in the perfect condition, just like the area where they grew up. I mean, in Cuba and Nicaragua, it's always around that 70% humidity. It's the same heat, and that's what they enjoy most. And when they show all the potential that they have inside of them.
Well, what does being an operations manager mean for you then?
Oh, it means that anything that goes on within luxury hospitality, I discuss together with Peter. So new business opportunities. Of course, I speak to a lot of boats, a lot of pursers or chief stews or captains to talk about training. Together, we try to explore new possibilities to help people become the best versions of themselves. Our goal basically, it's the broadest sense of the words, making sure that everyone in the team is well equipped with the tools and the information that's needed to do a perfect job. And what I like is the fact that we really look at our own profiles in the Talent Dynamics setting. Peter is a very creative person. He comes up with new ideas every 15 minutes. I have a lot of steel energy, so I'm a bit more for the overview. I'm not scared, but I always see the risks involved. If we didn't know that from each other, then we could be very much annoyed with each other because I'm always breaking and he's always running away. But if you understand that it's actually a talent that someone has, it's great to be able to tap into that. Just like any other people in the team, if you look on our website, you see our team is perfectly circular in that way. We have people with all the different energies that we can tap into. We can help out each other. And it's great to have such a wonderful team with us and work with everyone.
So what's next for you and Luxury Hospitality Management now that we've gone through, 2020, the first part of 2020, sort of throwing a curveball that nobody ever would have expected? We are coming out into a new normal. Travel is starting again. What is next for you?
We are we've already trained on some boats already. We're slowly but surely picking that up again. I think a lot of people will actually use this time and the coming months to do a short season, and everyone has had the time to really reflect and really think about the team. And for that reason, we're talking to a large number of boats who really came up with the idea of we want to progress, and maybe not this year, but for next season, next year, we'd like to be even better than we are now. So we're building programs, we're putting programs together to be trained in October, September, and October to really get them going for the new season. I'm always, although I see a lot of risks, as I explained, I'm always positive. And it's a time of great opportunity. We took the time to really reflect on what we do and how we do it, because in any company you just keep on running as you do. You're doing one job after the other, and that's not too much time to reflect. And now, of course, we had quite some time on our hands to do that, and we're talking to more and more companies to make a collaborations for the future. I can't say too much about it because we're in the middle of talking to them. But there's huge opportunities coming our way just to be able to touch on even more people in the industry than we do now.
Wonderful. Well, Eric, it all sounds great. And I thank you ever so much for your time in educating me and everybody else out there that had as little knowledge as I did on cigars.
Hopefully soon we can smoke one together, man.
You know what? I've never done it, so I might not like it, but I am always willing to give it the good old college try.
Very good. Thank you so much for having me.
No, you're welcome back anytime. Once again, to all of our viewers, thank you for tuning in. This has been Eric Schmidt, operations manager of Luxury Hospitality Management. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. Tune in again for another episode.